I've been thinking a lot lately about times when I failed. There was the time in college when I choked on the final and ended up with a D in my literary criticism class. My straight-A honor roll persona had a hard time with that failure. So much so that I tell you the story the way that I just said, instead of leading with the truth, which was that I spent too much time in the library with my friends instead of really focusing on Aristotle and Plato and countless others that we were supposed to read. Still can't really make much sense of those guys. There's my failure to really learn how to swim. When I was 9 years old, the 8 a.m. swim lessons in the freezing cold lake were more character building than skill building. There was no way I was putting my face in that water. I could barely put my body in that water. I still don't like to put my face in the water, but I do love to be in the water. I'm a Pisces through and through in that way. But I'm a feet on the ground, head above water kind of swimmer, which is to say, not much of a swimmer. I've adapted my swim stroke, but even when I last took lessons as an adult, it was when we shifted to the backstroke that my swim instructor admitted, "Ah, now, we've finally found your stroke." Then there was my first summer in seminary when I took German so I could pass the language exam for my MA program. That didn't go very well. New York is hot in the summer, and we've already established that I can be distracted. I failed the exam, but I solved my problem of how to finish my degree requirements in another way. That fall, I switched over from the 2-year MA program to the 3-year MDiv program, which had no modern language requirement. I admit I have not really given scholarly German much of another thought. But all of these examples are so sweet in retrospect, aren't they? The way I'm telling it now, all these years later, don't really capture my fear of my father's reaction to my grades or my competitive frustration at the pool even today. If I knew how to swim, if I hadn't gotten that D, if I hadn't failed German, I probably wouldn't be standing here in front of you today. So I give the Holy Spirit credit where it's likely not due and mosey on with my youthful failures, building my adult life. It's really a quite wonderful way to approach it if the mistakes of youth are the extent of one's failures. Got to thinking about failure a lot lately because I was realizing that we don't talk about it much as adults, or more precisely, we don't talk about failure much in the present tense. It's embarrassing. And we especially don't talk about failure very often in relation to our spiritual life. Do we fail in our discipleship and live to tell the tale? You might be thinking that you wouldn't mind challenging me on this assertion. At first glance, the disciples seem like excellent models for failure. But if you really think about it, they are more like models of misunderstanding. We know a lot about the gospel stories where they just don't get it. It being everything from who Jesus is to how to heal, to why it's important to stay awake at times, to what the parables actually mean. They're so clueless that even Jesus shows frustration with them from time to time. And we often neglect their post-resurrection accomplishments, like fostering the movement of Christ believers that would become the foundations of Christianity. Their youthful misunderstandings come close to our own hearts. We feel a camaraderie in their questions, their lack of eloquence in asking things like, "How are we supposed to feed all of these people?" Their inability to heal resonates with us. Their petty arguments about who will sit beside Jesus in heaven. It makes us feel like we can do this discipleship thing, we've got this. But let's be honest. With the exception of occasionally not being able to drive out demons, they really don't fail as much as they misunderstand. Sometimes our failures are more than just not perceiving a situation correctly. We let people down. We lose our minds. We jeopardize our relationships. We fail at controlling our addictions, our anger, our pettiness. Big projects that we love fall apart. We confess a lot of these things every week in prayer, but what does understanding failure really mean for our discipleship? Is discipleship just all about picking ourselves up again? Is our faith a try again kind of project? And if so, how do we forgive ourselves and move on? Are we simply to understand our failures in light of God's grace? I know that we are sinful and we all fall short, but frankly, I'm looking for something between Calvin's total depravity and oversimplifying our failures into God's providence. I want to know how to walk with the failures that I can't tell stories about yet. We talk often enough about things that pull us away from our faith or from our discipleship. We recognize that temptations lurk, that parts of life are sometimes difficult. And is there a way to make sense of our failures beyond those growth points of our youth? Does our being pulled away teach us something that we should be paying attention to? Is there room for failure in who we are as a people connected to God? The older I get, the more I hope there's room for failure. And I've been seeking ways lately to acknowledge my failures that don't just try to explain them away, but which embrace them. I was filling out some ecclesiastical paperwork a few weeks ago, and I stumbled upon this passage from the community of Mark's gospel that Bob read for us this morning. It's hard not to love this interaction between Jesus and the blind man. It's so vulnerable and human on all sides. Can you imagine being the one to tell Jesus that the healing didn't quite work? Commentators love this narrative. It's squeezed between the miracle of Jesus and the disciples feeding over 5,000 people with 7 loaves and a few small fish, and Jesus asking his disciples just a few verses later, "Who do people say that I am?" The healing of this man's blindness is most often understood in metaphorical terms. Like him, the disciples can't really see clearly at first, but then they are able to see. Peter's proclamation of Jesus as Messiah a few verses after this story is a pivotal point in Mark's gospel. It stands in stark contrast to a question of challenge that Jesus put to his disciples right after they had fed all those people, when he turns to them and says, "Do you have eyes yet fail to see?" In this sandwich interpretation, this two-phased healing is so clearly about the development of understanding among the disciples. It's about perception and our ability to first understand very little and then to slowly have our eyes opened to the call of discipleship. Among all four of the Gospels, this inability of the disciples to really understand what Jesus is teaching is most prevalent from the Gospel of Mark. The disciples are painfully human in their lack of understanding. What seems so obvious to us as readers is not at all obvious to them. The story seems to really capture how they grow and begin to perceive things differently. When it's understood as a metaphor, it seems like such a beautiful example of what I was suggesting earlier, that discipleship has so much to do with how we learn to see more clearly. It works so well at conveying this metaphor that some problems begin to spring up with this interpretation. First, this passage is one of the rare passages that appears only in Mark's gospel. In our weekly Bible study on Wednesdays, we talk a lot about how the gospels interact with one another. New Testament scholarship teaches us that the gospel communities that gave us Mark and Luke and Matthew shared some source that helped the framework of commonality of sayings and stories. And while Mark's community was the most sparse with words, the communities of Luke and Matthew have a lot of the same stories, often in the same order. How those gospels shape those stories share their community's theological lens, each one a bit differently. And this wonderful metaphor for the disciples gaining sight and perception is not included in any of the other gospels. It leads to some speculation as to whether it's an embarrassing story about Jesus. The Gospel of John does not share that overlapping framework with Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but it does come the closest to telling this story. In John 9, a man who was blind since birth is healed, but there's none of this messy mud and spittle situation. The latest of the four Gospels, John's community has a strong theological agenda. It does not mesh well with a Jesus who is less than able to heal the first time around. So along with a very short list of other stories, the parable of the secretly growing seed, healing of the deaf and dumb man, Jesus' sayings about salt, and the flight of the young man in the Garden of Gethsemane, this healing is unique to Mark's community in describing Jesus as not being able to heal this man on his first attempt. I was surprised to find out that this story does also not appear in the lectionary, which is the weekly 3-year cycle of readings from the Bible that we typically use as our liturgical guide. One could begin to wonder then what this story is doing here and why we don't read it very often. And if it's meant to highlight the development of the disciples' understanding of Jesus' work, why submerge it? Lifting that story up would seem to strengthen that interpretation. So much ink is spilled on the disciples' failures, on Jesus using his spit on this man's eyes. The New International Version even translates this verse that Jesus spit on his face. And whether or not using his saliva made him a magician, it's such a bodily passage, however we understand it. It holds the intimacy of our physicality in a very special way. We've already explored the context and what it might mean metaphorically about perception and what the disciples were able to see. But the more I read about spittle and saliva and about the disciples being middle blind, that is, able to see but not perceive, the more I wondered if this narrative wasn't best understood with Occam's razor. You remember the good old Franciscan Friar William of Ockham, who proposed that the simplest answer is often correct. Maybe the first time Jesus tried to heal this man's blindness, it just didn't work. Probably walking a sharper razor's edge than Occam's by suggesting this about Jesus, but do we simply have a story here of Jesus failing? He was, after all, fully human. Does it help us at all to consider what this story might mean for us if Jesus failed? I confess it helps me. I lack Jesus' grace and failure to simply lay my hands on the problem again. I am more likely to cry or fight my way out in embarrassment. I might convince myself that a lie is the truth to justify why I failed. I might walk away. I might flee. I might not want to talk about it. I might lie to myself about what happened. I might wallow in guilt. I might feel trapped because there's no way I can correct it. Have you ever found yourself responding to failure in any of these ways? Failure is really, really hard. And if the disciples' failures so easily can become our own, can Jesus' failure also become our own? Can we see ourselves not in the difficulty of our lack, but in the awareness of what within our present failures is beautiful? Not just in what we learn or that we are enfolded in God's grace, which of course we are, that's true all of the time. But there can be beauty in failure. There can be tenderness in failure. There can be openness to forgiveness that is beyond what we could ever understand in success. To fail and to admit our failures, not just the ones that led us on a different path, but our down-to-earth, right now, day-to-day failures. There's a parenting mishap, a divorce, a colleague or a family member that we end up arguing with too often, or the project or the sermon that just doesn't come together, the lack of attention to a struggling friend or parent. To fail and to admit our failures creates vulnerability. And I guess that's what I like most about thinking about Jesus failing in this healing attempt. He is so human, so vulnerable. And that aspect of failure is part of what makes the incarnation so wonderful for us. Jesus is not just divine. He is fully human. Like us, he fails. Like us, he is vulnerable. Like us, he has to open himself up to forgiveness. He has to find courage. He has to move forward. Our discipleship is not about our egos or our perfectionism or even our success. Jesus reminds us of that right in this story. He is not bruised by this failure in any discernible ways. Yet he shows us the beauty, the tenderness, the way that we can move in failure as easily as success. In that movement, there is courage and there is vulnerability. And like our success stories, our failures show our beauty, and our discipleship need not aspire to cleaning everything up, to doing everything well. Failing in our discipleship may just open us up to something we could have never seen in our success.